Hey everybody, welcome to episode 14 of the Dennis Poulette podcast. Cannot believe that we are on episode 14 already, but it is an incredible privilege today to have Dave Ron and Ebony Davis here with me talking about their new book, which is all about joy and all about helping students find it. And so I want to get into the interview. We'll talk more about the book. We'll talk more about who they are in the interview, but I hope that it helps you lead and launch your teenagers. So let's get into the interview. Hey, thanks so much for joining the podcast. Today I have two guests, which is a first for us here. Two guests, Ebony Davis and Dave Ron, and we're here to talk about their new book that's coming out, and it's all about helping teenagers experience joy. I'm super glad that you guys are here. So first question, obviously, is always, who are you and what do you do? So I'm going to let you guys take it away.
Well, I'll go first. Hey, everybody. My name is Ebony Davis. I'm a youth pastor. I've been a youth pastor for about 14, going on 15 years in Maryland, just outside of Washington, D.C. And I love it there at Trinity Baptist Church. But more than that, I think like many of your listeners, I'm just a mom. I'm a mom with a couple of teenagers, just trying to navigate this whole world of being a mom of teenagers. So that's my background.
Awesome.
Yeah, and my name's Dave Ron. So I was privileged. I've probably split the last 48 years between Youth for Christ work, both directly with kids as well as in national leadership, and being a professor of youth ministry at Huntington University. And it was in that last context that Ebony and I connected. She was a grad student of mine. And that was, gosh, over 10 years ago now.
Yeah, almost, yeah.
And, we've managed to stay connected through different writing and research projects over the years. And this was one of them. So I'm just now recently retired, and I haven't figured it out yet. But I'm a grandpa of five. But actually, a month ago, I stopped working full time with YFC and trying to figure out how to spend all my time besides just being full of joy.
There you go. That's awesome. Awesome. Thanks, guys. It's really good to have you. And we're really here to talk about that very topic, about joy and the book that's coming out and the book that y'all wrote together called Disrupting Teens with Joy. Is that right? That's the actual title of the book. Okay. So can you give me like a rundown? What do you mean by that? What does that mean? I mean, the subtitle's Helping Youth Discover Jesus focused gritty faith, which is a really catchy thing. Yeah. I have no idea what it means, but it sounds cool. And so why don't y'all give me kind of a little bit of a rundown, and then we'll talk about what does that mean for parents? What does that mean for those of us who are walking alongside of students?
Yeah. So I guess the important thing to know is that this book is written for parents, adults, a youth pastor, is anyone who just loves kids and has an influence on kids and wants to see them have the joyful life, the joy that Jesus offers, and wants to help them to go deep in order to get that joy. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think I'll punch it up even a little bit stronger. I think it is intentionally aimed at those adults. That, in other words, if I think our theory about how to help young people experience joy, there's nothing about that pathway that makes us think it's possible without going through the adults that care most about them. So again, the combination of parents and everybody who cares about young people, they carry a part of the burden of helping them experience the kind of joy that we're talking about with Jesus.
So as y'all are talking about that, it makes me think, so if we're trying to help students experience joy, there's got to be a little bit of a lack of joy. And so I guess my question would be, like, what are those things that perhaps have been blocking joy, or the things that maybe we think are joyful, but they're really not, like it's counterfeit joy? Or maybe we're not going there yet, but just kind of, what are those things that y'all have kind of experienced even?
Well, you know, it's interesting, Dennis, that we're just coming off of, or we're in the middle of, not coming off of, but in the middle of this sort of COVID pandemic thing that we have going on. And it has really put those sort of things that offer sort of fake joy or temporary joy, it's really put those things on trial. Because I don't know about your youth group, but in my youth group, all of the things that teens think bring that they think bring them joy, right? Their cell phones, their computers, you know, all of those things that they relied on for their leisure that were supposed to make their lives so great, they're kind of over it right now, right? And so they're finding that those things really don't add up. And then if you think about, you know, their friendships and all of those do, they bring a certain type of joy. But then what happens when you don't have constant access to those things, when you don't have constant access to your friends and your sports and the things that, you know, felt that you felt made you happy all of the time, when those things are all gone, where does your joy come from? And so, yeah, I think there that we're all starting to see that the things that we sort of depended on to bring us joy really don't do it for the long haul. They're good for the temporary, but they're not good for the long haul.
You know, there's a sort of a triangulation of truth that Ebony and I sort of have lived in with this book, and some of it is because we were privileged to be invited into a Yale research project that was funded by the Templeton Foundation around joy for adolescents, and so we had a couple years in that sort of research space, and then because we felt like we couldn't get after this without, doing a deep dive in terms of our personal experiences of joy and reflection. That became something for us. And then, of course, we have lots of experience in actually working with young people ourselves. And so all of that sort of triangulates here. So asking the question, how do people experience joy? How do kids experience joy? How does anybody experience joy? Is a fair question. And it's one that you should take some time talking to your young people about, talking to your son and daughter about, asking that question. Most often we can always identify what I'll call spikes of joy, little experiences of joy. And the positive psychologists, they would call this states of joy. So there's something about that. It's like an hour and a half ago, I went for just a little walk because it's a gorgeous day where I'm living right now. And I just walked up and down the block. For no other reason than, I mean, it just like was a joyful experience of nature, just slowing it down a little bit, noticing this particular flower, enjoying the sunshine. When the Cubs won, finally, I'm a Cubs fan, you know, that was a spike of joy. But if my joy had depended on the Cubs' success, I'd have been miserable for most of my lifetime, right? So there's something, it's accurate to say that's a joy, but it's a state of joy. And the psychologists have also identified something we call dispositions or trait of joy. So that's a deeper thing. And then, of course, scriptures, you know, holds the standard of joy as being one of the fruit of the spirit, and actually commands us in a way that implies that we should be able to rejoice always. So there's an intersection there that we got to go, wait a minute, either joy is the real deal and durable all the time, or we're vulnerable to the wins and losses of your favorite team, or whether the weather is, or your favorite pizza, or whatever, you know.
Yeah, I remember whenever I grew up in the church, and I remember always talking about, well, you know, happiness is that thing that's fleeting, and joy is that deep down, you know, what you always have, kind of a thing. And I remember that, like, that's the only real teaching we ever had about the difference between what you're talking about. I mean, that's what you're saying without saying it like that, right? Like, but I remember that, like, oh, no. The difference between happiness and joy is happiness is something that happens when the Cubs win, and joy is something you always have in Christ. And like, maybe that was like my 5-year-old brain trying to comprehend what these people spend like years and years studying. But that is probably the way that most of us teach that to our kids. And so is that kind of what you're saying? Or is there like something else that I'm missing?
I think it's similar. We're in the same camp. But I don't want to, what I don't want to do is diminish people's experience of, as you describe, happiness. I think that that's a, don't try to talk somebody out of this moment of ecstasy that they're having right now. It's really, it matches every criteria of joy. It just doesn't last.
Yeah, I mean, if the Dolphins ever win the Super Bowl, trust me, I will be experiencing happiness for sure.
Well, but it's interesting because it goes to your worldview, you know. So somebody who doesn't stand on a claim like we do of the promise of joy in our relationship with God through Christ, if they don't have that as a certainty, what they're doing is they're going to try to go, okay, I'm joyful when this happens, this happens, this happens. I'm going to just try to order my life so that I get more of those things. And maybe it's more good relationships. Maybe it's more money or stuff that they acquire. But that is in fact how people try to navigate life. They're going to go, I want more of this and not less of this. I mean, that's the fun thing about the topic joy. You can go up and down the neighborhood, knock on doors and say, hey, if you could have more joy, would you want it? And for the most part, I mean, you just kind of, I haven't met somebody who would say, no, not really, I'm good.
Well, yeah, yeah. I think I read somewhere one time that most teenagers, when you ask them what is it that they want in life, their number one goal is to be happy. Their number one goal is to find what we would say is joy, but they're talking about that shallow joy, I think, that you guys mention in the book, right? The stuff that is completely different.
Yeah, it's interesting because if you think about, we spent so much time talking about Paul in Philippians 4, talking about rejoice always. And yet he's sitting in a jail cell and he's telling everybody to rejoice, you know. And so, yeah, I think it's that they're looking for, that no matter what their circumstances, that they would be able to have joy always, no matter what's going on in their life. And that's that that state joy.
So one of the consequences of this, you know, there is a really meaty research database that started around the middle of like 2007, I think, from Christian Smith and Company, called the National Study of Youth and Religion. And the outcome of that, in a nutshell, was that young people in America tended to see God in a particular way. And they called it moral therapeutic deism. But the therapy side of it was exactly what you're talking about, Dennis, that young people tend to credit or blame God in a general vague way for whether they're happy or not. And man, that's going to cost us in the church if we don't help form them to a deeper, clearer view of who God is in their lives and the companionship that they can enjoy with Jesus Christ. If they don't get that, if they think of him as this sort of vague source of, you know, good or bad things and happy or sad things in their lives, then when things go sideways, as they always do for all of us, they're just going to be, it'll cost them their faith. And that's part of the outcome of that research is people are going, this is not orthodoxy that young people have. They have a very, very shabby, fragile sense of God, and it needs to be strengthened.
Yeah. So then, I guess my question would be then, how do we as parents kind of help lead them into this kind of joy? What are some things maybe that we can do, parents, youth pastors, etc.? I know it's not easy. I guess my real question is, how do we get it for ourselves, right? Because if we don't have it, it's going to be real difficult for us to give it to our kids. And then resting in that kind of joy on our own, how do we help them see that the stuff that maybe they're chasing is not exactly what they ought to be chasing?
I'll take a quick shot, and then I want to set Eb up because, you know, one of the fun things about the book is Ebony got to tell a number of stories about trying to, you know, do some of this journey with her kids around the dinner table, since they're still in the home and things like that. It was really, really cool. But I'm so glad you connected those dots, Dennis, because that's exactly where we land too. We absolutely believe that there is no pathway, there's no technology, if you will, for us to deliver joy apart from us knowing what the joy is personally and living that personally. In other words, we can't give what we don't got. And that's kind of where we're at right now. It's like, so the book's target, while we have this background, this downstream of us is the young people we love and their joy, the target is all of us who are adults. How do we start to do a journey with Christ differently in a way that makes us authentic carriers of joy to young people that we live in? And frankly, again, going back to that National Study of Youth and Religion, as Ken Dedean, a professor from Princeton, observed about the data, if kids don't know who God is, if they're sideways about who God is, they learned it from somebody. And it's either the church or parents that are not sort of showing the way. So, Eb, how have you kind of punched that up with your children?
One of the great things, and I would really suggest that you have your parents do this, or that you invite those who are listening to this podcast to do this. We took one night where I sat down with my kids. It was just a spaghetti night, you know. and I asked them, you know, in our church, now you guys have to imagine that my kids grew up in our church, so they know all the adults and everything. I said, in our church, who is it that, you know, sort of inspires your faith? You know, think about the adults in our church, and tell me, who is it that has sort of a compelling faith for you? And it was really hard for them to come up with adults that have examples, adults as an example. But eventually they landed on two ladies. One of them had recently lost her husband. And the other one was an older lady, sort of a mother of the church. And now, again, there are lots of adults that they interact with this church. But I said, well, what is it about these two women? And it really was that their authenticity sort of shone through. So the woman who had lost her husband, she was very openness about her sadness and her brokenness. And she didn't try to put on airs, but yet she let them know, but I know that God is here. In other words, she allowed the kids to see her sort of going through and to see how God brought her through that whole thing. And so the same thing was with the other woman. Again, it was just sort of their authentic display of their faith to see them go through challenges and changes and cling on to Jesus as their hope and their joy throughout that time. So often as adults, we kind of feel like we don't want to let kids into our world when we're going through something, but they need to see that, and they need to see that God shows up and is there through those difficult times too. So that was really a huge thing. I would really encourage parents to ask their kids, who inspires your faith church? What adult?
That's a great question. That would be, I'm hoping that they, you know, hopefully people would mention my name. That's kind of my goal, right? Like, please, if someone asks that, I sure hope that I would be on a list of somebody that would say something like that. And I was going to say, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. Say, it gets awkward when you have to keep saying, okay, anybody else?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you're raising your hand. Like me? Yeah. I'd probably just say the question like, other than me, uh-huh. Right? I'll set myself up for a win. Oh man. So I was going to ask, so if you're thinking about, oh man, I lost the question that I had. We were talking about spaghetti night, and we were talking about, kids asking, oh, who inspires your faith? Oh, and the ladies, that the answer was that there was a lady that had gone through some difficulty, right? And so I think part of our culture right now is that we really enjoy not letting our kids go through any kind of difficulty. So as we are doing that, and we're were lawn mowing everything out from in front of them so that they can just have this nice, easy path. All of a sudden, they don't get to experience joy, because real joy is really forged in adversity, right? And so I know you guys are nodding. I'm hoping I'm hitting on something. I haven't read the book. So, but like, but like the idea that I struggle with, and here's just me being honest and say that one of the things that I struggle with the most whenever I'm teaching students is that I look at them and I say, what are the things that are really going to help you as you mature in the faith? And I know that it's struggles and I know that it's heartache. And right now, okay, so like we're going through pandemic as a culture, as a world, those kinds of things. But like, I look at my kids and I'm like, these guys, they don't have a ton of difficulties. I mean, I already told you guys, the church that I'm in, parents have it, they have what they need. Nobody's really struggling for anything. And so if that's the case, I feel like there's a little bit of, you know, the cards stacked against, you know, I don't have the right hand to be able to help whenever, until there's a tragedy. Does that make sense? And so like, obviously nobody wishes tragedy on anybody, but so how do we get our children, our students, to understand that one day something may happen and they're going to need to hold on to the joy that comes from Christ? And the only answer I have, and maybe you guys have a better answer, the only answer I have is waiting and being patient and walking alongside and teaching truth and hoping that whenever these things happen, when a loved one passes away, when somebody, you know, some tragedy, they don't get into the college they wanted to get, any number of tragedies, those are the things that they can still say, well, you know, but at least I still have Jesus, which is, at the end of the day, that's all we're going to have anyway. So now I'm preaching, but I really do want to ask you guys the question, what is it that we can do to help in those kind of ways?
Yeah, if you don't mind, I'll go first on this. I think there's something pretty profound about life where you don't have to create like false scenarios, and you don't actually have to do what math teachers sometimes do, where they go, you'll someday down the road you'll need this.
Yes.
You know, there is plenty of evidence in any given week of something that's frustrating or painful or hurtful for anybody, and how they deal with that is always ripe for conversation or ripe for, I'll call it, Jesus supercharged tutorial, his coaching that he can do in their lives. You and I are poor substitutes for Jesus, and actually we shouldn't be trying to usurp Jesus' role. What we want to do is help young people experience the kind of companionship with Jesus as the coach and tutor, that he becomes the source of the joy. He becomes the person that they engage in those conversations. He becomes the person that you crank up your listening to. So there's a bunch of things that we talk about in the book that are about being attentive to Jesus in ways that you are not right now. And by the way, why aren't you? So the word distraction in our title is a really important one, because we think that what's happening is young people, for the most part, are kind of skimming along the surface of life, splashing around on water, doing what they do because that's what they do. They're aimless. They don't have purpose. They don't have intent. And sometimes youth ministry kind of comes along with and offers them snorkel gear to help them to kind of get under the surface a little bit, and to see what all is out there, and to give them promises of a better life. But it's a better life like in a better American life. It's a better life for good outcomes that you care about. It hardly ever do we give them scuba gear and say the good stuff, the really good stuff, is way below all this. And if you're willing to do the adventure, we can go deep, and down that deep where deep calls to deep, you're going to be still and know the voice of God. You're going to hear the voice of God. You're going to recognize the voice of the Good Shepherd who knows you by name. He's the one who has your deepest identity at stake. He's the one. But if you can't figure out how to companion with him in better ways, if you're always stuck in the moment going, gosh, I wonder what my youth pastor Dennis would do. What is it? You know, if you're thinking that way, then you haven't owned this, and you've got to move into that kind of ownership. Now you can see why it becomes important for us as adults to have that experience too, because we can't teach somebody to scuba, then we don't know how to scuba. We got to have deep stuff that we're talking about. And honestly, our book is full of examples of people that we know and we've told stories about who've gone to adversity. But my friend and co-author goes front and center on that. I mean, she's got a story that I didn't know until we started writing the book. Hmm. And it becomes a really important element to our story, too.
And so when we're trying to get them to kind of go into this deep place, that's really where the grit comes in that we talk about in the title, right? And kids get grit, right? They may not get grit with Jesus, but they understand grit. You know, if you've got a kid who's really interested in getting that A and that's the most important thing to them, they understand the grit, the study that needs to come behind that. Or if you've got a great baseball player in your group, he understands the grit that's needed to get to whatever his goal is, whatever college he wants to go to. He gets that. He gets the investment that needs to take place in order for them to reach their goal in both of those circumstances. So what we're talking about when we're trying to get past the surface and past the snorkeling where they just sort of see a glimpse of Jesus, but to get into the depths with Jesus where they can have joy no matter what, that comes also through grit. And so in the book, we outline some gritty habits that you can help your team to get these habits so that they, when it's time, when something tough comes, that the joy is always available to them, that they know Jesus because they've been in the deep with him, because they've put these habits into play. Yeah.
Hmm. Ebony, just hold your microphone up and drop it, will you? I mean, that's just good stuff.
Yeah. I feel like that is exactly what we're trying to do in student ministry anyway, is we know that that's what we're aiming for, right? We know we're not going to be here all the time. We know one day, even as a parent, like I always say that, my YouTube channel, all the stuff that I do online, everything I'm trying to help parents with is to help them lead and launch their kids. And really the idea is you're going to launch your kids. And one day they're going to have kids. And now I want them to be able to lead and launch their kids. And so as we're thinking about even just the joy that there is in Christ and the joy that there is in walking with Jesus and journeying with him and going, like you guys say, into the great unknown of the most beautiful part of the sea is under where nobody ever goes. But that's pretty much, I mean, even the surface of Jesus, for goodness sakes, should be more than enough for us.
Right.
I guess, so can we get super practical for a minute and just kind of try to give, so let's just say that I'm talking to one of my parents and they're like, yeah, Dennis, this is cool. This is great. I want to do this. I want my kids to experience this joy. I'm tired of them feeling like the joy that they get is whenever they beat a level on a video game, or whatever. Like that's my reality, right? But like, I want them to really experience this joy, and I want to experience this joy because this joy doesn't just come from me getting a raise or from me getting to, you know, actually go back to my office or whatever. You did say you guys outline some practices. Can you give me maybe one or two of those that will help us super practical? Like, hey, today you already gave me the dinner table idea. Like, hey, who do you know that actually like really has an exciting, a, 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 enduring faith, right? Like if we could pinpoint those people in our church, that would be something that would be worth talking about with my kids. But what are some of the other kinds of practices that maybe a parent could say, you know, this tonight, I want a quick win for tonight with my kids. And I know obviously this takes time. It's not a quick thing, but like, I want something that will help me see or help my kids as they are trying to experience the joy that comes from Jesus. Does that make sense what I'm asking?
Yeah. So, I mean, well, you know, one of them is, you got to take time to sort of be still before God and to actually get into his word every day. Now I know that this is something that you hear all the time and you pastors say all of the time and parents even say all of the time, you know, but how are we guilty sometimes of saying to, you know, telling kids to do that? And one, either we're not doing it ourselves because we're so busy and that sort of thing, and not leading our kids to do that. And again, this is sort of just encouraging them to get in God's word and spend time in his word every day, because that's where it's going to start. So that's one area. Another area, this was another really fun experience that we had, is testifying, to actually speak the name of Jesus every day, right? So this was another sort of experiment that we did in the research phase. I actually had a group of kids that were all, you know, church kids, all kids that really love Jesus, you know, and that sort of thing. And I challenged them and I said, speak the name of Jesus every day for a week and let's see what happens. And they came back, and that, because part of it is sort of that intentionality, right? You're always thinking about him so that you can talk about him. And it's not in a forced way. It's kind of like, you know, I love baseball, therefore I talk about baseball. You know, I'm really excited to go to this college, therefore I talk about this college. I love Fortnite, therefore I talk about Fortnite, right? So to bring Jesus sort of into that mix of the things that you intentionally talk about. And it sort of has a two-way street. One, you are putting him out there for others to hear and to, you know, see how your life intersects with him, but also you are intentionally thinking about him more. Dave, maybe you could talk about the rest.
Yeah, well, that's so good. I mean, one that was almost a default is like, young people especially are this way, but we're all this way. We're social animals. We're created for relationships. Yeah. We need true partners. We don't do this dive by ourselves without, you know, exposing ourselves. It's really hard to go deep when you're the only one in your world that goes deep. So just need a couple people. And Jesus, you know, qualified this in terms of the measurement of two or three. We get all super excited sometimes in the American church about thousands of people in attendance. Well, there's nothing in the scripture that says thousands of people in attendance was a great thing. And the two or three gathered, you know, in the presence of Christ makes things happen, unleashes God's power. And so I know Ebony and I became, this is where our pivot was in the writing of the book. We moved from just, you know, kind of co-researchers and collaborators to deep dive journey people, right? We're going to share, we're going to be partners in one. So now we're talking about what she learned. I'm talking about what I learned, what I didn't learn, where my failures were. But that conversation about that journey was so encouraging to be in that mix. So that's a simple one. Is like, man, find somebody in your world who wants to go deep like you want to go deep. And then one that's going to step on toes, and I'm gonna say this, especially it's going to step on toes for we Americans who don't have much margin in our lives. And it goes all the way back to the fourth commandment. And arguably, if you look at the 10 commandments, the fourth commandment looks out of place. So that's the, remember the Sabbath to keep it holy. Mm. It doesn't look like a commandment like the other ones. It looks like a habit. It looks like and since we're gritty folks, studying habits is a big part of this. And we go, well, geez, it seems like God introduces a keystone habit that makes a lot of sense against habit literature that says once a week, press the reset button, create a day that is all about God at the center. Stop doing the things that make you restless, which is work, which is in our world, social media, maybe. It could be all kinds of, just stop. Put it aside for an entire day so that God has your attention. How can you possibly live in a way where you give God your full attention when you can't even give him this day that gives him the, I mean, it's a day that sort of helps us to get better at being attentive to God and his ways. Now, I'm going to tell you, you got to dance that line where it's not legalistic, right? So I had a conversation with one of the cohorts in, I think it's Columbus, Ohio. John was leading some urban kids, and he asked me, hey, my guys want to know, can they play basketball on Sunday? If they're going to rest. And I said, that's a great question, and it's not a one-size-fits-all. So tell those guys, go play basketball, and then talk about whether or not it was restful or restless. Talk about the way they played. Because I've played basketball with people where it is hostile. It's nasty. And I've also played with people where it's just pure joy. It is. And it can go both ways. So it depends a lot on how they handle it. So put it in play and talk about it and rule it up or down. Some people can absolutely look at social media on their days of rest and it doesn't get in their heart. Some people are just the opposite. Some people should stay away from news shows on those days, right? There's all kinds of things. Honestly, when the Cubs were in the World Series, I had to turn it off on a Sunday because it was just grinding my stomach to pieces. It was so intense right there. I just walked away. I go, no, I don't want this feeling as much as I love the Cubs. I don't want the Cubs to hijack my experience of being in God's presence in a restful state, in a joyful state.
And I think Dave makes a good point when he says, you know, this is not a one size fits all. And so maybe, you know, Dennis, I don't know about you, but for me, Sundays are a very busy day. It's part of my work day since I'm in ministry. Of course, I love it and I enjoy it. But so maybe that isn't the day that you can do it. But the whole idea is to make sure that you're setting aside one consistent day to be with Jesus, to rest in his presence, to just enjoy who you are in him. And one consistent day every week. Again, it's not to be legalistic.
We had fun writing about this. This was not common at all for Ebony and I, and it was actually one of the things that the Yale people wanted us to investigate. So we felt really out of our league. I hadn't spent, it was gorgeous in terms of discovery. It's been a life changer for both of us.
Yeah, and I think too, like sometimes, you know, Ebony, as you were speaking, I was thinking about just the way that Sundays are, and not just Sundays, but just ministry in general, right? Like sometimes ministry, you feel like you can't take any time off. Like even as we're speaking, I'm getting pinged and messages and all kinds of stuff, and I'm like, what are you talking about? It's like 4:30 on a Thursday afternoon. Like why am I getting a bunch of messages about stuff that I probably have to deal with, right? But the point is, like, it's for a lot of us, it's hard for us to turn it off because it is our life. Like we equate our ministry with Jesus, and like we think, well, I'm serving Jesus and Jesus is supposed to be my everything, and so therefore my ministry is supposed to be my everything. And that can't be true. And I think parents can fall into that same trap where it's like, well, my kid needs this and my kid needs that and my kid needs that. And like I know that my wife, whenever she wakes up, like as soon as she wakes up, man, if my kids are awake, it is a nonstop day for her because she works at home. So it's like, boom, 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 got to get everything done. And so therefore, it makes it more difficult to take those rest days, right? Like you can't rest from being a parent. You can't rest from being a pastor at times. Like that's the way we feel, even though we know that in order to be a good parent, in order to be a good pastor, we need those times of rest and just of hearing from God and having time to enjoy him too, right? Like it's not even like it's an obligation. Like you guys are saying, it's not a legalistic thing. it is something that I want to do more and more as I grow.
Yeah.
Dennis, we could support, there's a trap in that, and it's one that I fell into for most of my ministry life. And I sort of wrote about that in the book, because I work for Youth for Christ, so we can live for God. And living for God is a different cadence than living with God. And I tell some stories about the Lord just kind of pulling me deep and both celebrating the way he wired me to achieve good things, you know, and work hard and stuff. But for the most part, they're also exposing that there's a limp in that giddy up. And it will rob me of where he wants to take me in terms of the depth. So the distinction there's a liberation when you discover what the difference between with Jesus and for Jesus is all about.
Yeah.
And there is, you know, in truth, there is, you know, we have to give up something, right? Because we only have so many hours in the day, but that's sort of where this deep trust comes in, right? That's what God was trying to teach in putting in the fourth commandment, right? This deep trust in him. I'm going to take care of you, that we're trading off something, but we're getting something so much better, right? And so there is sort of this idea that we have to let go of something and trust God with it, and trust that the things that he needs us to get done will get done. And our kids are never going to pick that up if we don't model that first, because that is not the way of our culture.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, this is good stuff. We could go for a really, really long time, but I know you guys have other things to do. I do want to kind of start wrapping up and just kind of want to give you a little bit more time, maybe just to say, you know, hey, what's a couple of things or one thing, a parting shot kind of a thing. Obviously, buy the book, read the book, use the book, experience the book, live the book, all that stuff. But besides that, what is something that you could maybe leave us with as we wrap up today?
I'm gonna actually commend something in the book that Ebony had a lot of say-so over, because she's a lot more practical than I am. And that was, at the end of each chapter, we threw a couple questions in that I would call those good spaghetti dinner questions. I think taken together, and by the way, there's a companion curriculum too, for youth workers to sort of do 4-week study and series and stuff like that, to try to get after the 4 specific habits that we talked about in there. But the habits are reflective of the grit, and the grit is about getting your heart and mind right about, like, what I conclude is the only thing that the disciples had in common, this ragtag bunch of 12 people, who were they? And the only thing that I think they had when the dust settled, just before Pentecost, after Jesus is risen from the dead, all they knew was to be with Jesus. That was it. He taught them to be with Jesus. That's what Mark 3:14 says. He appointed the 12 that they should preach the gospel and that they should be with him. That's what he said, the Great Commission. Go make disciples. I'm with you always. That was what Peter and John were represented by in Acts chapter 4 when they're kind of hauled before the court. These are unschooled, ordinary men who'd been with Jesus. It's like that's the center of the bullseye. And if you get gritty about being with Jesus, there are people in history we can look to who've done this well, like Brother Lawrence, practicing the presence of God. We talk about him in the book. And this humble dishwasher who figured out how to be with Jesus while he washed dishes. Well, it's doable, and that's where the durable joy is. So it's really cool to be there.
Ditto.
Ditto. Wow, nice. That's a co-author right there. Co-author.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, what he said, except for I said it better in the book. So go read it.
Yeah, that's right.
That's awesome. Yeah. No, yeah. Thank
you. I really think this will be a great resource for parents. It really was. I mean, like I said, it came at it from a lot of perspectives as a youth pastor, but really as a parent who just wants what all parents really want, and we want our kids to be filled with joy. And I think this will help.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Thank you guys so much for being here. I really, really, really appreciate it. I know it's hard to get everyone's schedules together, but I do appreciate it. And I'm looking forward to reading it when it comes out. I think it's next week sometime. So I'm going to have to go on there and get them to send me a copy. So
I just noticed actually that I could, I went on to Amazon and it looks like it might be up and available now. So
nice. Okay. So there you had it. We heard it from the horse's mouth. Oh man. Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much. I appreciate it. And, we will be in touch for sure. And, thanks again for being on with me.
Thanks, Dennis, for having us.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you, Dennis. We enjoyed it.
There you have it. I sure hope that that conversation helped you. I know it helped me think through how I can help my kids find joy in Jesus, and I hope that it has given you a lot of hope as well. You can certainly find their book on Amazon or anywhere else. I will put the links in the description below. I hope you check it out, and we will see you in the next episode.